It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
I'm Stuart Vonnie.
I'm Harris Faulkner.
I'm Brian Kilmeade, and this is the Fox News Rundown.
Tuesday, November 15th, 2022. I'm Dave Anthony. Donald Trump for president. He may announce another White House run tonight.
I think there can be no question that he brings a lot of energy to a very large base of people. In fact, many people who were not traditionally Republicans prior to his first candidacy. So there's going to be a lot of excitement there.
But some Republicans may be done voting for him.
I'm in the camp that I wish Donald Trump would simply retire from the battlefield. And really, it would be great to have him just not try to become president again.
I'm Jessica Rosenthal. A crypto firm's meltdown is getting a lot of attention in the finance world, as much about the collapse remains unknown. And those in the crypto space wonder if what appears to be an epic fail has downstream effects.
It's not fair to tell the customers that their assets and their savings are safe when actually you're behaving in a way that, you know, in the traditional finance world, you would go to jail for.
And I'm Ben Domenech. I've got the final word on the Fox News Rundown.
It's only been a week since the midterm elections, and the votes are still being counted. Control of the House still not decided. But someone's already looking ahead to 2024. Donald Trump, the former president, will make an announcement tonight from his Mar-a-Lago, Florida estate, and it's widely expected he'll announce another run for president.
Donald Trump remains a very popular figure in the Republican Party.
That's what GOP Congressman Jim Banks told Fox News Sunday. But some Republicans blame the former president for the lack of a red wave taking over Congress, for helping nominate candidates who, like him, questioned the 2020 results and lost, prompting President Biden to say ahead of today's summit of G20 nations in Indonesia,
"The American people prove once again that democracy is who we are. And there's a strong rejection of election deniers at every level."
And that is not something many Republicans expected to be hearing after the midterms.
I think there's a lot of dissension in the ranks right now, a lot of discussion about the role that Donald Trump played in torpedoing GOP hopes for the midterms.
Liz Peake is a columnist and Fox News contributor.
That's where you really find a lot of Republicans saying, you know what, perhaps his time has passed. It was really pretty much a clean sweep of Trump-endorsed candidates losing. And here's the thing. Not only did they lose, an awful lot of people think they lost because instead of talking Trump policies, which many of us approved of and voted for, they had to talk about the election in 2020 being stolen. That was sort of the price of admission for a Trump endorsement. And clearly, in retrospect, that was a pretty dead on arrival message. Obviously, Joe Biden toured the country, and even with his horribly low approval ratings, I think his accusations that the GOP was out to undermine democracy, it landed, particularly with young voters. So I think Trump really polished his own brand in this midterm election at the cost of the party and, frankly, the cost of the country. I think it's an absolutely terrible outcome. So I'm in the camp that I wish Donald Trump would simply retire from the battlefield. And really, it would be great to have him just not try to become president again.
You wrote a column the other day that Ron DeSantis is the new Republican Party leader. Obviously, he had a big night in Florida. He won with a 19-20-point win over Charlie Crist, the former governor, the Democrat. So the attack, you know, the former president likes to have nicknames. He tried Ron DeSanctimonious. That didn't stick like Little Marco or Sleepy Joe, did it?
Well, no. And I think for two reasons. One, it doesn't even make sense. I don't think Ron DeSantis is sanctimonious. I've really not seen that from him. But secondly, people are tired of that. And I think Trump's attacks on him really just kind of confirm what an awful lot of people think about Donald Trump, that it's really all about him. He doesn't like to share the spotlight. I think DeSantis is the fellow most able right now to pick up the Trump legacy and carry it forward. I think if Trump keeps up all this sliming of potential primary competitors, the only person he's going to be hurting is himself.
Former President Trump was counted out in 2016. A lot of people thought he would lose big to Hillary Clinton. He did not. There was the two impeachments, the whole Capitol riot thing. People said it was his image and his legacy was tarnished forever. Yet, in polls leading up to the midterms, he was way ahead of DeSantis and every other potential Republican rival. Isn't it possible that he comes out swinging and the people who loved former President Trump embrace him and he still is way in the lead?
Yes, it's possible. But I do think that that core group of Republicans that think he was cheated and that, I mean, I just think it's getting smaller every day. And, you know, I don't really think you can win elections by being backward looking, by constantly relitigating the 2020 election. People are tired of it. I really believe that. I think he was treated horribly while he was president. I thought the impeachments were pure politics and just horrible. But, you know, at some point, you got to get over that. And at this point, he really looks, I think, like a sore loser. I mean, 2018 went pretty badly for Republicans. Not unusual, but nonetheless, it didn't go well. He lost in 2020, and now he's lost again.
What can he say in his Tuesday night address to change your mind and others who are ready to dump him?
I think literally the chances of that happening are slim to none. And here's why. What you're asking is for him to change his personality. And I really just don't see that. I mean, it's self-destructive. He's on a self-destructive path. And I just cannot imagine that turning around.
Now, we thank Liz Peek for her perspective and turn to someone else who worked in the Trump White House.
Well, I think there can be no question that he brings a lot of energy to, you know, to a very large base of people. In fact, many people who were not traditionally Republicans prior to his first candidacy. So there's going to be a lot of excitement there.
Mark Lauder is a former special assistant to President Trump who also worked on his 2020 campaign.
I can guarantee you one thing. Whoever gets the Republican nomination is going to be running on Trump policies because they worked. And it's a great contrast to what's currently going on, and Americans see it in their, you know, in their lives every day.
What message do you think he's going to deliver tonight? Because he has been facing a week of criticism about Trump candidates didn't do well in the midterms. A lot of people blaming him for there was no red wave and his election 2020 issues. That do you think that he's going to bring those up, or is he going to turn a page?
I think he'll probably try to address both issues. And I think it's too simplistic to say, you know, that he or any one person is to blame for the outcome of the 2022 election. You know, as things stand right now, it looks like that Republicans will flip the House for only the third time since 1954. And it came down to a razor thin margin in the United States Senate. In fact, we still don't know the outcome of how things will turn out in Georgia. But when I look at some of the numbers behind those overall results, I'm really encouraged because you saw double digit gains with Black voters, with Hispanic and Latino voters. We saw gains made by Republican candidates, by married people, with folks with college degrees. And our message is continuing to grow the party.
We know about the never Trumpers who in the Republican Party were never with him. We also know about the always Trumpers, the people in the party that love him and they're very happy, I'm sure, that he's back in the race. But about half the party might be in the unsure category, or what can he do? Because all those people have been hearing the negative about him for the past week. What can he do? What can he say to have them say, you know what, let's do this. Let's bring him back.
Well, I think the first thing is that he's got to talk about his successes. And I think that's one of the greatest advantages that he and really the America First agenda or the movement has, is that we don't have to convince people that our policies are hypothetical and we think that they will work. They actually remember they do work. They remember that 2 years ago, gas was not, you know, above $3 and $4 a gallon. They do remember that we didn't have inflation just a couple of years ago. All of these problems that people are facing in their daily lives are problems that are the result of the leadership right now. The Democrats, Joe Biden, the radical left.
Why now, though? We're a week away from the 2022 elections. Why announce tonight?
Well, there'll be no question. Donald Trump's going to put the marker down and say, if you are going to run and try to compete for the Republican nomination, you got to go through me. You know, to use a sports analogy, if you want to be the champion, you've got to beat the champs. Well, this will be their opportunity to prove it because they know he's in.
Do you think that if he runs again with the announcement tonight as expected, that he believes that it would also make it harder for the Justice Department to indict him as they investigate him for the documents and all that?
Yeah, I think that there's probably some argument to that. There's probably some, you know, some thought to that. But I don't think that's why he's doing it. I think he truly believes, when you look at what's going on in America, that it's because of the failed leadership of Biden and the radical Democrats, and that he believes he is the best person positioned to bring an end to that and get back to those America First policies that caused so many people, you know, whether it was in formerly the Blue Wall, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and so many others, they came out for him because they thought he was going to fight on their issues. He showed he would do it. And so is he the best person? And that'll be the case he has to make. Is he the best person to reignite that movement and get the control of the White House back?
The same day, former President Trump is expected to announce his 2024 White House run. His vice president, Mike Pence, releases a book, So Help Me God. Pence has called the Trump actions around last year's Capitol riot reckless. He told Fox's Sean Hannity last night,
"We parted amicably, and we spoke a number of times after I left office. But frankly, when the president returned to some of the rhetoric about me and others who had taken a stand for the Constitution, I thought it was best that we just go our separate ways. But the foundation of our ability to part amicably came from that relationship that was forged in those 4 years. And I will always be proud of the record of the Trump-Pence administration and what we were able to do for this country."
Now, in addition to being a Trump assistant, Mark Lauder was also Vice President Pence's press secretary.
If you listen to what he says, 95% of what he talks about, whether he's been out campaigning for Republican candidates or whether he's been giving speeches, is about the successes that the Trump-Pence administration had when they were working together. There is that one area around the 2020 election and January 6th where they disagree, and the vice president says they will probably never see eye to eye on that. But what they do talk about and what he talks about often is all of the successes. So I do know that while the book does dive into the January 6th and those things, it also talks about his journey into public service, his journey through faith, and then also the many successes that they had together.
I mean, you work closely with both, Ben. They seem like they're very different people. Are they? In person, as different as it seems they are?
The one thing I can tell you from all of my time with both of them is that, A, during their time in the White House, they were very close. They talked a lot, almost every day, multiple times a day. And the vice president and the president, if you listen, they were saying the same things, but in their own languages. Obviously, the president is very clear in his language, and he uses phrases and words that really resonate with a lot of folks. The vice president obviously spent a lot of time in government public service through Congress as the governor of Indiana and then ultimately as vice president. He speaks more in the traditional language you would expect of someone in Washington, D.C. So when you paired them together, I think that they were able to deliver one consistent message to two different distinct groups just through the languages that they used and their own style of delivery.
Do you think Mike Pence is going to announce someday in 2023 that he's running for president?
I wouldn't be surprised if he did. I know that that's something that he and his family will discuss. They will pray on. They will, look at the numbers and those kinds of things. I know public service is something that the vice president feels very called to do as a duty, not only through his faith, but also to the Constitution and to our country. And if he thinks that he has a voice and a message to offer, I think he would put himself out there to do it.
Mark Lauder, former special assistant to then-President Trump, also former press secretary to Vice President Pence. Great to talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Kilmeade. I want you to join me weekdays at 9 a.m. East as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and, of course, what you think.
Listen live or get the podcast now at BrianKilmeadeShow.com.
This is Ben Domenech with your Fox News commentary coming up.
A firm called FTX was one of the biggest cryptocurrency trading firms in the world, and it has collapsed, filing for bankruptcy. FTX had dozens of impacted affiliates, and while based in the Bahamas, has a U.S. subsidiary as well. Fox business anchor Liz Klayman said Monday,
"The lightning-fast collapse began a week earlier when rival exchange Binance tweeted out it would be liquidating its holding in FTX's token FTT due to, quote, recent revelations."
Money is missing. It's not exactly clear how much yet, but we could be looking at billions. Last Sunday, it was reported people tried to withdraw $5 billion from the company in a sort of run on the exchange, run by 30-year-old Sam Bankman-Fried, also known as SBF. And while he tweeted last week all was, quote, fine, things were clearly not. FTX paused withdrawals, and now others in the space like BlockFi have paused them as well. FTX grew quickly to become a mega crypto trading platform. Celebrities like Tom Brady and Steph Curry were associated. The Miami Heat Stadium was renamed FTX Arena just last year.
I would compare it to Enron.
Former U.S. Treasury Secretary Larry Summers told Wall Street Week on Bloomberg this past Friday,
"The smartest guys in the room, not just financial error, but certainly from the reports, whiffs of fraud."
Now, the Wall Street Journal reports that because FTX was based in the Bahamas, that meant it avoided certain laws regulating trading and what they could do with certain funds. The Journal says federal prosecutors in New York are now looking at whether and how FTX used customer money on other things, including Sam Bankman-Fried's hedge fund, Alameda Research. While being located in the Bahamas may complicate potential prosecution, FTX U.S., located here, was part of the bankruptcy filing. Now, on top of all that, the new CEO said it appeared FTX was also hacked, and the company said they were moving crypto wallets to another safer location. Let's back up first and look at what we know has happened so far.
FTX was one of the biggest cryptocurrency exchanges, and they had a native token called FTT.
Natalie Brunell is the host of Coin Stories podcast and The Hard Money Show.
And what's really important for the average investor to know is that really anyone can create a crypto token. And that's sort of one of the issues and one of the problems here, because there's so much speculation that happens, and you really need to be careful where you're putting your money. So basically, this was the equivalent of a company creating its own token, and then they sold some of that on an unregulated online exchange that was actually offshore. But then the company also kept some of it and washed it through another company that they own. They were actually doing insider trading, apparently, with different types of tokens. And then essentially, they would also use that token that they created for collateral to get actual loans and U.S. dollars. So they were building, you know, a house on top of quicksand. And as soon as a rival got a whiff of that, which actually the rival was Binance and they owned some of the FTT tokens, my understanding is that they said, whoa, 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 we're going to actually sell our position. And when enough people start to sniff something out and everyone goes to sell, all of a sudden there's a run on the bank and the exchange can implode unless they have the underlying assets. So basically they had a ton of liabilities, but they didn't have the reserves and the assets. And so they had this crypto token that they essentially printed out of thin air, washed it through another company, which was Alameda Research. They used this token as real money, as collateral for loans. And then when there was a run on a bank, all of a sudden they collapsed. So I know it's kind of difficult to understand, but it's not too dissimilar from our current system, where basically, you know, we have a system based on credit. People take out loans. And if there are no reserves and there's a run on the bank, then that bank can go under. And in this case, if it's unregulated, if it's offshore, your money is not safe. It's not protected. It's not insured. So it's really a shining example of the risks in this space. And it also paints a picture of why Bitcoin was invented and why it's so important to highlight in this context.
And the founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, somebody, I guess, didn't like him very much and had tweeted about this. And that sort of sparked some of the bank run, if you will, right? People started to read that tweet and say, wait a second, where is my money?
Yeah, so all of the details are still, we're still waiting to find out exactly what happened, but that's exactly what that rival exchange Binance did. Mm. Something was off with the balance sheet. And so they started to sell their tokens. And some of this was made public on Twitter by Binance's CEO. And so again, it prompted a selling by everyone. And if the bank, the exchange, doesn't actually have that money and those assets and reserves, then all of a sudden they're left holding the bag, and everyone and their investors and the retailers that basically were defrauded are holding the bag. And so that's what's really unfortunate. And so now reading these articles and reports that allegedly SBF is, you know, trying to flee the country and they've filed for bankruptcy and the assets weren't there. I mean, this is just, it's a really, really sad, tragic situation for people who entrusted their money, because there were top level legacy investors, there were pension funds, there were big celebrities investing in this. But really, I mean, this crushes the little guy that might not be able to easily recover from something like this.
Now, we know FTX has filed for bankruptcy, and the new CEO, I believe his name is John Ray III. He's pretty famous for coming in after the Enron debacle. He, I guess, they said no withdrawing of funds right now, so everything's sort of on hold. But it sounds like at least hundreds of millions of dollars are gone.
Yeah, I've been reading that there's about an $8 billion hole. And so it's, again, it's really sad, because SBF was one of the people who, in the crypto space, was going before Congress and trying to get favorable legislation for his companies, and to find out that there was insider trading going on, that there was a back channel where assets were flowing using customer deposits. I mean, that's just really egregious. And if there was, you know, this type of criminal financial crime and fraud that took place, then people need to be held responsible. I mean, it's not fair to tell the customers that their assets and their savings are safe when actually you're behaving in a way that, you know, in the traditional finance world, you would go to jail for.
Yeah, that actually is an important point. Like, it makes us think like, okay, so is this one person or one group of people maybe doing something wrong? Or are we looking at the entire crypto space and saying like, wait a second, is everybody in crypto now losing their minds over this horrible incident?
Well, it appears that there were certainly bad actors here. And I unfortunately don't believe that the investors will be able to see their money back. And that's really, really sad. So I believe that this will actually give lawmakers more reason to intervene in this ecosystem and make regulations faster to protect investors. So I think in the near future, we're going to see a more clear stance from both the SEC and the CFTC about what is a digital commodity like Bitcoin, which is an asset with no issuer that you can self-custody, and it's an open source protocol distributed around the world, no company, no CEO. And then on the flip side, what's a digital security or a crypto security, and how do they register, and what risks should properly be disclosed? And so at the end of the day, you know, lawmakers and investors, I think both of them will eventually come to understand that crypto is very, very different than Bitcoin. Bitcoin is akin to the internet of money, and it will empower sending money over IP in a way that's completely distributed, it's censorship resistant, it's trustless with no intermediaries and third parties, whereas crypto is sort of a wild west of tokens that anyone can create in the same way anyone could have created a website in the 90s during the tech craze. And unfortunately, there will be some painful lessons.
But is the definition of Bitcoin a cryptocurrency, right? Does Bitcoin fall under the umbrella of crypto? It's just handled, you know, in a different way. In other words, the blockchain applies to that in a way that maybe the blockchain doesn't apply to crypto generally.
Yeah, so that's an absolutely great question. And I think that's why there's so much confusion, because you hear us Bitcoiners say Bitcoin is not crypto, but yet it uses the cryptography in terms of the technology in order to build it. However, what's different about Bitcoin and crypto is that Bitcoin set out to create money for the people, whereas crypto and the technology around it creates tokens that often extract money from people under this guise, because anyone, again, can create a crypto token, but for it to become truly decentralized, the kind of network effect you need, and in order to have proof of work, which is essentially backed by energy like Bitcoin, That took 14 years for Bitcoin to get to that point of network effect and this kind of adoption. And there have been 20,000 copies and none have been able to achieve that decentralization of Bitcoin. And I think in the future, when regulation does come in, crypto tokens will be more like crypto equities and crypto securities, whereas Bitcoin will continue to be what it has been recognized as by the SEC, which is a digital commodity and a form of digital property.
Finally, Natalie, you touched on it, but this idea of regulating this space, it seemed like maybe it wasn't going to be such an uphill battle, right? Because SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried, who ran this, you know, tremendous exchange, FTX, was deeply involved in talks, it seemed, with lawmakers. I think he even supported one Democratic lawmaker's bill on this space, and then others in this space accused him of, you know, really trying to get a monopoly. I wonder, as the SEC starts looking at this and as prosecutors in New York look at this, does this make, I guess, regulating this space less complicated because this happened? Or do you look at Sam Bankman-Fried and say, well, his company was in the Bahamas. There's not much we can, you know, there's not much that can be done where, depending on where you're located. Like, when you look at sort of all the moving parts here, where do we land in terms of regulating this moving forward?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I do, again, think that this will be an impetus for faster regulation, because a lot of people are concerned about the money lost by investors and by people within the traditional system. And I think that personally, I'm very bullish on how Bitcoin will be regulated and how it already is regulated, because, again, it's deemed as a commodity and as property. It has a certain tax specification. I just hope that they do more fair accounting for businesses so that more institutions can come on board and comfortably put Bitcoin on their balance sheets. But when it comes to crypto tokens, there really needs to be a movement forward to understand how a crypto exchange or a crypto company can register one of these digital tokens. And there needs to be clear guidelines on what is a security and what is a commodity. And so I think that those regulations will come sooner rather than later, given everything that's happened and all the speculation that was the result of all the money printing that happened in the last 2 years. And again, if I was a crypto company, I would be a little bit nervous right now about those regulations. But being a Bitcoiner, I'm actually not. And there's a really big push by Bitcoiners to educate policymakers so that they understand really the difference between the two, making sure to separate so that a commodity like Bitcoin isn't confused with a security like the crypto tokens, which I would argue many of them are.
Natalie Brunell, host of Coin Stories Podcast and The Hard Money Show, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Subscribe to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com.
It's time for your Fox News commentary.
Ben Domenech.
What's on your mind?
So I see that there are a number of people out there who are defending Mitch McConnell's approach to these midterms, saying that he deserves less blame than former President Trump, given that the former president obviously made a major impact on the decisions made within primaries to choose a number of different Republican candidates in critical Senate contests. This is obviously something that happens after every election that doesn't go the way that people would like to see it go. But I have to say that the idea that Mitch McConnell is someone who is blameless is absolutely laughable. You know, you are not a serious political person if you think that Mitch McConnell should escape any kind of blame for this election cycle. A big factor in this election cycle was the Senate Leadership Fund, which spent enormous amounts of money in lots of different ways and played or tried to play in primaries in ways that the NRSC under Rick Scott's leadership did not. Mitch McConnell is really old when it comes to the political game. He's not just old in terms of his age. He's old in terms of the way he spends money. He doesn't believe that you should spend money really before Labor Day. He thinks of elections as being things that break late. And he essentially sits on his cash until that point and then makes decisions. And those decisions are often based not on whether you're going to try to elect a Republican senator or not, but on whether you're going to elect a senator who approves of Mitch McConnell or not. That's one of the reasons why you have the discombobulation of him spending millions of dollars against Don Bolduc in the primary in New Hampshire, then spending millions of dollars for Don Bolduc, then pulling all of the money late because Don Bolduc said something not nice about Mitch McConnell. This is a situation that's played out over and over and over again, and it's really high time that Republicans confront it. Mitch McConnell spends money as if this is still the 1980s, as opposed to a situation where the people on the other side, fueled by the money from Chuck Schumer, are spending money early to define candidates and define them negatively in the minds of voters. Something that worked out for Chuck Schumer across the board when it came to so many different senatorial candidates this cycle. Mitch McConnell may not be the ultimate reason that a lot of these candidates got selected, but he is the reason that money didn't get spent in places that it was needed. I think that unfortunately for Republicans, they are now past the point where they can avoid addressing this issue. It is the elephant in the room. He is out of step, out of his time, and totally disconnected from any kind of policy achievements or advancement. He exists only to approve nominees. That's what he's good at. And that's the kind of thing that, frankly, we should be looking at this moment and saying, that's just not good enough. We need generational change in Washington all around, in the presidency, in the speakership, and in the leadership of the Senate. And this is undeniable at this point. We can't have people in charge of the political spending of the Republican Party who are still spending money as if we're in a pre-iPhone, pre-social media, pre-internet era. That's just not the political reality anymore, and it's why Mitch McConnell is a minority leader once again. I'm Ben Domenech. Listen and subscribe to the Ben Domenech Podcast, which you can find at foxnewspodcast.com.
You've been listening to the Fox News Rundown. And now, stay up to date by subscribing to this podcast at foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen ad-free on Fox News Podcasts Plus on Apple Podcasts. And Prime members can listen to the show ad-free on Amazon Music. And for up-to-the-minute news, go to foxnews.com. Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Emily Campagno, host of the Fox True Crime Podcast. January 26th, 1988 was a cold and suspiciously quiet night at the Indianapolis Police Department, but the frigid night took a chilling turn with news of a triple homicide. This week, I'm joined by retired Sergeant Judd Green for a look back at this savage case. Available now on Apple, Spotify, and foxnewspodcast.com.